following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Tuesday. I hate saying it's Tuesday because then I have to say, and gotta laugh is still not back. Laffy is dealing with something, a health issue with her hands, and she's working on it, and hopefully she'll be back with us before too long. But we have a great fill-in for her today. The FOIA terrorist himself, Jason Leopold, will be joining us a little later in the hour. And actually, I had just, I realized it had been a while since Jason was on the program. And I, over the weekend, just shot him a message. I said, hey, how about coming on with me this week? And he said, yeah, I can do Tuesday. Tuesday's great. And it turns out, go figure, early this morning, a huge story courtesy of Jason Leopold breaks, and it has to do with the fact that he's the FOIA terrorist. And I say that in a loving way because I think it was the Bush administration who dubbed him the FOIA terrorist, and he did the smart thing. He's like, okay, I'll take it. And so from now on, from here on out, he embraces the handle. So sticks and stones and all that stuff. So he is the FOIA terrorist, and screw you, George W. Bush, and your administration. Somebody else I'd like to say that to in a more a blunt manner is Rick Santorum. Now, I mentioned this the other day after his comments at this Young America's Foundation talk were made public, where he talked about, you know, we came and founded this country and there was nothing here. It was a blank slate. Oh, I know there were Native Americans, but, you know, frankly, they don't matter. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. And that was about a week ago. And Rick Santorum had been absent from the CNN airwaves ever since. Now, that's notable because Rick Santorum is a paid contributor at CNN. So, yeah, when they say someone is a contributor or an analyst, that means they are paid by the network. So they will show up and they're not just a guest. They're paid to be on so many times a year or as often as they want them. But nobody wanted Rick Santorum, apparently, on CNN after this. In fact, even after the not State of the Union address the other night, CNN was notable in the fact that, thank you, Rick Santorum was not there. Now, we did have Van Jones and whoever else they had on. So it kind of made up for it. But, you know, at least we didn't have Rick Santorum. That changed last night. And I flipped on the TV and there he is on with Chris Cuomo. So I want to play for you a little bit. I'm not going to play much of it because, frankly, the segment sickened me. But to listen to Rick Santorum's fumfering and how he tried to get out of it and just couldn't. And after that, I'm going to play for you a little bit of Don Lemon when he came on a couple hours later and basically not only let Rick Santorum have it in absentia, but also Chris Cuomo, too, for having that fucker on the air. All right. Sorry. It pissed me off, too. I'm right there with Don Lemon. So here is a few seconds of what the idiot Santorum, Google it, said. And then Chris Cuomo trying to get an explanation out of him.
Created a blank slate. We
created
a nation
blank slate. Right.
From nothing. I mean,
from
there's
nothing
here. I mean, yes, we have Native Americans, but what? Candidly, that there isn't much Native American culture in American culture.
Really? No. I cut it down. Right.
Two problems. One, it's not accurate.
No.
There is a lot of affect from the Native culture on America.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot of people here who believe in that. And this seemed like you were trying to erase diversity in the interest of some white Christian right.
No. Just to be clear, what I was not saying is the Native American culture. I misspoke. I was saying Indian. What I was talking about is, as you can see from the run-up, I was talking about the founding of our country. I'd given a long talk about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the ideas behind those, and I was saying we sort of created that anew, if you will.
And I was not trying to dismiss Native
Americans. In fact, I mentioned them because, yes, they were here and they did have an impact. In fact, in this country, you're right. They have a huge impact, particularly in the West and many other areas of the country where they have a huge impact on American culture. I was talking about, and I misspoke in this respect, I was talking about the founding and
the
principles
founding.
Embodied in the founding. I would never, and, you know, people have said, oh, I'm trying to, you know, dismiss what we did to the Native Americans. Far from it. The way we treated Native Americans was horrific. It goes against every bone and everything I've ever fought for as a leader in the Congress. I believe, as our founding document says, that we are endowed by a creator with unalienable rights and that we are all equal. And when we treat people as other or less than human, that's when America, that's when every country gets into problem. We did it with the Native Americans.
What?
We did it with respect to African Americans. I believe we're doing it with children in the womb today.
With children in the womb? Is that physically possible? Children in the womb? Are you talking about fetuses? Because fetuses ain't children. I know I'm sort of it's off the point, but every time I listen to this clip, that jumps out at me, and I had to say it. Fuck you, Santorum. So you hear the word salad there, right? I'm not going to play any more of that. You heard the pertinent point. He had nothing. He had nothing to say. And Chris Cuomo, sorry, wasn't a whole lot better. So enter Don Lemon. Ooh, enter Don Lemon, because Don Lemon was having none of it. Absolutely none of it. All right, so you go, Don Lemon.
I was furious watching the interview in my office. I cannot believe the first words out of his mouth weren't, I'm sorry, I said something ignorant. I need to learn about the history of this country. No contrition. Didn't talk about, you know, the suffering that Native Americans have had to deal with in this country. It was, I mean, Rick Santorum, really?
Really?
Who did he think? Did he actually think it was a good idea for him to come on television and try to whitewash the whitewash that he whitewashed? I mean,
boom.
It was horrible.
It was.
It was horrible and insulting. And I apologize to the viewers who were insulted by it, because I was sitting in my office furious.
Good for you.
Because he's done
Me
it
too.
So many times.
Yep.
So many times. And it's just, I'm sorry. It was just, it was so egregious and insulting, and everything that we talk about the founding of this country. Europeans did not found this country.
No, they didn't.
It was here. The Native Americans had this country before the Europeans came. The Europeans conquered the country. They colonized it. But they didn't. It had nothing to do with the founding of this country. And he should recognize that. He needs to know that, especially if he's going to be on television representing us and talking about it. He should be doing it from the right perspective and not from some perspective about how, you know, what Europeans. No, that's the wrong way to look at it. That is the he is. He's it's all wrong.
Yep.
I'm sorry, but that is the truth.
You don't have
truth.
To apologize, Don.
And, I can't believe it. I was watching it going, I cannot believe this man is sitting here and doing this. It was like for Black Lives Matter, it was like Native American Lives Matter moment for me watching that.
All right, I
you
did
have
edit
an insurrection
this. Here we go.
Because people believe that America was founded in the image of white people, and that the country was built in their image, and therefore the election should go their way. It's the same thing that Rick Santorum is saying about Native Americans and the lack of the contribution, what have you. It's the same thing. I think people know that. I just think people are tired of being insulted every single day.
70% of that party accepts
that doesn't
the big lie.
Right. That doesn't make it right. And that doesn't mean
of course
that
it doesn't make it right. What I'm saying is, if it were as simple as 2 + 2 = 4, we wouldn't be in this situation.
It's not that. Listen, you're not getting anywhere, because
I know you're upset. What I'm saying is,
rightly so,
what's the solution? What's the fix? If it were as simple as he's wrong, you're right, we wouldn't be here. That's all.
We got to go, because we're not going to agree.
I agree because I know where you're coming from, and I love you, Don Lemon.
Yeah, I love you, too.
We agree on the problem. What's the solution? We got to figure it out.
I got a solution, but anyways, not my decision.
I got a solution, but not my decision. The solution would be, number one, get Rick Santorum off of CNN's air. That's what Don Lemon is saying. It's not my call. He has no say in who is a paid contributor and who isn't. But I would think that those comments made by Rick Santorum would disqualify him from that position. There are plenty of other failed Republican candidates for office who they can hire as a contributor. MSNBC has a boatload of them. And why is it? It's always the Republicans who lose re-election they hire on as contributors. What does what Rick Santorum or Carlos Curbelo have to say make any difference to anybody anywhere? No. All right. I had to play that because thank you, Don Lemon. I cut out most of what Chris Cuomo said because, frankly, he was infuriating, too. I mean, when I first saw Santorum on there and I heard David in the other room going, is that Rick Santorum? And I said, yeah, Chris Cuomo is giving him the opportunity to rehabilitate himself. What the fuck? You know, there's only so many hours a day that they have, you know, airtime, and they waste it on people like that. I wonder what happens if it still works. If you Google Santorum, because back about 10 years ago, if you Googled Santorum, the first or second thing that comes up, well, now it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, now it's the fifth entry. If you Google Santorum and the one entry that simply says Santorum gives you the definition of Santorum. The frothy mix of lube and fecal matter that is sometimes the byproduct of anal sex. The second definition of Santorum is Senator Rick Santorum. Never did a, and this is pre-meme. I mean, this is something that, oh God, what's his name? Dan Savage did because Rick Santorum likened homosexuality to bestiality. I mean, he's just a horrible excuse for a human being. CNN, fire his ass. The American people did. The people of Pennsylvania fired him years ago. You keep paying him to smear Native Americans? Whew. Okay, how to get that out? Hey, it's Tuesday, everybody. There is some breaking news, and this has to do with the interview coming up with Jason Leopold. And just so you know, we recorded that a couple of hours ago because Jason had to leave to go get his second Moderna vaccine. So he will be all inoculated following today. So he's not available now. So we taped this a couple hours ago. This story broke after we finished taping our interview. And I'm just going to read it to you because it's fascinating. A federal judge has ordered the Department of Justice to release a March 2019 legal memo clearing former president, you know, the former guy, of potential obstruction of justice charges following the Mueller investigation, with the judge accusing former Attorney General Bill Barr and agency lawyers of deceiving the public. Yeah, maybe I should play this. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson yesterday ordered the DOJ to release the legal memo within 2 weeks in response to a FOIA lawsuit filed by CREW, the watchdog group Citizens for Ethics and Responsibility in Washington. The DOJ had argued in court that the full memo, portions of which have already been released, should be withheld because it falls under exceptions to public records law for attorney-client privilege and deliberative government decision-making. But the judge said yesterday that those claims were not consistent with her own review of the unredacted memo or the timeline revealed by internal emails among top Justice Department officials. Jackson, who was appointed to the Federal District Court in D.C. by Obama, wrote in a scathing 41-page decision that, quote, not only was the attorney general being disingenuous then, but DOJ has been disingenuous to this court with respect to the existence of a decision-making process that should be shielded by the deliberative process privilege, end quote. Oh, no, and she continues. Sorry, there's more. The agency's... Hold on one second. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get to this. The agency's redaction and incomplete explanations obfuscate the true purpose of the memorandum, and the excised portions belie the notion that it fell to the Attorney General to make a prosecutorial decision or that any such decision was on the table at any time. So she ordered this memo be released due to Cruz's FOIA request. Jason will come on to talk about a whole cache of documents that he received, I guess, late yesterday from his own FOIA request from the Mueller investigation. Interesting, huh? All right, real quickly, Tamara on the line. Hi, what's up?
Hey, Nicole. The day before Santorum did his interview, Ron Reagan came out with a new commercial from the Freedom Religion Foundation.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, I ignored it. And then the next day I saw Santorum's ad or BS, and I immediately went online and gave $10 to the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
Okay, well, this one has nothing to do with the other, but I gotcha. All right, Tamara, I got to run because I got this interview with Jason Leopold, and it's fairly lengthy, so I don't want to miss a beat. So I think I'm giving us enough time, so we'll get it in before the end of the hour. So with that in mind, the fact that the judge ordered this memo about Bill Barr's misleading the public on Trump's liability here. It's related. So with no further ado, that sort of snowballs into this. And we welcome Jason Leopold back to the show via tape from today. Us on the line now is our old friend Jason Leopold, of course, a senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News. And Jason, once again, you got another scoop. Your FOIA skills just are overwhelming. And so tell us what this latest batch of documents you got is.
And you got me at a good time, Nicole. We spoke over the weekend, and I wasn't expecting these records. So we have something to talk about today.
Yes, I know, because it had been a while, and I thought, yeah, you know what? Let's get Jason on just to check in, see how things are going. Yeah. And so we booked to do it today. And I wake up this morning to a big story from you and Anthony at BuzzFeed News about another FOIA trove that came in.
Yeah. And so anyway, we'll have to do that again. You'll have to. So this may be the way I get documents now. It's by you coming out to me agreeing to speak with you just as a story breaks.
There you go.
So these are documents that I have been going after for a number of years from the Mueller investigation. And, you know, as you know, I helped to unredact the Mueller report. I had pried loose thousands of pages of the interview summaries, the FBI interview summaries known as 302s, from subjects and people who were targets of the investigation. And frankly, I've gone after every single document that Mueller, you know, that his team had collected during the course of their investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the what can be considered the supplemental material that goes along with these FBI 302s. This is, you know, the emails, the text messages, the memos that people like Mike Flynn, Paul Manafort, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, these are their personal communications that they had written during the campaign and even while, you know, they were just getting into the White House in 2017. So this is sort of like this is what Mueller scooped up during the course of his investigation. But they're incredible, you know, and they're incredible because it is, you know, really getting an idea of what happened, you know, during that campaign. And people may think they know, oh, I know everything that happened, but they don't, because we didn't get an opportunity to see all of this you know, all of these communications. We did not get an opportunity to, you know, to look at all of the evidence that Mueller collected. And so while the records pertain to a period in time that dates back to 2015 and 2016, they're still very newsworthy.
Oh, sure. You know?
And so this is about 300 pages of documents that they turned over. It'll be, again, the first, you know, the first batch that will, you know, we'll start getting every month. Who knows how long they have thousands and thousands of pages that they're turning over. But it gives us real insight, again, you know, into the campaign. Lots of discussion about Russia.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what I find really fascinating about this, and I'm coming at this from, you know, an observer, a journalist, obviously. But what's fascinating about this is that you have to look at this through the eyes of, you know, maybe the FBI. I mean, why was the FBI targeting the Trump campaign? Why did they target them? Well, you know, some of these records may provide some people with answers. You know, some people who believe, you know, nefarious activities were taking place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what we kind of honed in on and memorialized in our story. Laid bare in our story were, you know, emails from Mike Flynn, where, you know, Paul Manafort had just reached out. Paul Manafort, who had been fired from the campaign as campaign manager, he reached out to Mike Flynn and his deputy national security advisor, KT McFarland, just 5 days before Trump was inaugurated, wanted to share some information.
Yeah.
That he gathered from his travels overseas. And, you know, KT McFarland sends an email to Mike Flynn saying, should we meet with him given all that's going on? And Mike Flynn says, it's unclear who he's working for right now. Let's wait until we're in the hot seats.
Right. You know? And that was talking about, was that talking about Steve Bannon or Paul Manafort, who he's working for?
I don't think he was referring to who he's working for as Steve Bannon or Paul Manafort. I think it may have more to do who he's working for in terms of who he's connected to, like foreign, either foreign governments, foreign leaders. That's more or less what I think he's referring to.
I gotcha.
So, you know, then you have an email from, there's also text messages. We get to see the text messages related to Mike Flynn's communications with the former Russian ambassador to the U.S., Sergei Kislyak.
Right.
It was the, you know, it's, those communications were the catalyst for his ouster, for being, you know, lying to Mike Pence and being fired. You can see this sort of effort by, you know, by Mike Flynn to sort of contain the fallout from that as the media started asking questions. There are emails from George Papadopoulos saying, right, you know, Russian outreach. Here's some, you know, there's some questions. Some people want to, you know, meet with Trump in Russia. There is something from Roger Stone to Steve Bannon, which did come out during his trial. But there's a little bit more context here about, hey, I know how we can win this. This was in August 2016, but it ain't
going to be easy or something like that. Right.
There's some, you know, emails from, you know, from Jared Kushner about his secret meetings with Henry Kissinger.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I mean, a lot of this stuff is eyebrow raising. Henry Kissinger what the hell was Henry Kissinger doing meeting with them? You know, a lot of questions that make you go, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah, no, and that's exactly it. So it's to me, these are great historical records. They really help, you know, for those individuals who continue to follow, you know, what happened, what went on, what was happening, taking place behind the scenes. it's intriguing. You know, it adds to the intrigue.
It is. There was one, I don't know if it's in the story or I just saw you tweeted it. Ivanka is in there as well.
Yeah.
And at one point she mentioned someone's name that spelled PH something, and she had to explain that the PH is pronounced like an F.
Right.
What, really? Just seeing her writing this stuff in a somewhat official capacity is a bit off-putting, knowing what we know about Ivanka Trump.
You really do get the sense from, you know, I mean, she's even recommending, as they're bringing people onto the campaign, she's saying that Don Jr., that who she's copying on an email, he can help with military advisors to, you know, bring in some military civilian military advisors.
Yeah.
And
really, you know, why? How?
Right. So it's fascinating. It really kind of, you know, gives deeper insight into what was happening. And there really is a lot discussed here about Russia. There's no smoking gun.
Right.
There is, you know, there are lots of questions that one would understand that would be asked, you know, about this and about what they were doing, you know? So it's, to me, it's just fascinating. It's, everyone who's, you know, who's sort of mentioned in these, you know, emails, most of them at least, you know, George Papadopoulos, Roger Stone, Mike Flynn, charged with crimes, pardoned by Trump. You get a sense of their, you know, deep involvement in the campaign, advising the campaign. These are valuable records, important records. So it's been great to have this opportunity to kind of, you know, continue that reporting. Because I think that one of the things about Mueller and his report is that you don't really get a sense of, you know, to me at least, all the sort of all of the communications, you know, that were taking place. I mean, he obviously was tasked with investigating specific potential crimes. To kind of get this deeper understanding of what was being discussed, you know, at the time is fascinating. It's also fascinating because I haven't seen it anywhere, but there's an email from Mike Flynn to Corey Lewandowski,
right,
where he shares a news story from Russia state-run media Sputnik News with Corey Lewandowski, and where Mike Flynn is quoted in this story. And the story is about how the U.S. needs to engage Russia and Arab countries to defeat ISIL.
Right.
But in his email, he says, this is very important. You need to read this. And he says, hey, by the way, I met with Putin.
Right. I had dinner with him.
I had dinner. In fact, I sat with him at dinner. And we know that.
We saw the picture, right?
Yeah, we saw the picture. But this is the first time to get Flynn discuss that in his own words.
Right.
In his own words, not where he's speaking to the media, but in an email where he's talking about an email. He ends his email with Merry Christmas, signs off Flynn. I mean, so there's just, you know, you kind of almost in some ways feel like a fly on the wall.
Right. So Jason, you said you had no idea that this, all these, this group of documents was coming your way today. So you do these FOIA requests at any given time. How many do you have out there?
Thousands, Nicole. Thousands. I have thousands of FOIA requests, and I have well over 80 lawsuits against the government.
Wow. So then you just, something shows up in your mailbox one day? Is that how it works?
Normally they're supposed to on the lawsuit. So we sued for these.
Okay.
And, you know, they're supposed to have a date where they agreed to produce the record. they may have like agreed to do it. I just, you know, lost track of time.
Right.
You know, it's hard to keep up with what month are we in?
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's the first business day in May.
Okay.
They clearly turned something over, but I wasn't expecting it.
Right. So then you said this bunch was 300 pages, but you said this is going to go like the last one did, where every month you get another batch of documents. So what was the request for on this one? Was it any information pertaining to the what was the request for this?
I asked the government to provide me with every document that Mueller collected.
Oh, wow.
In the course of his investigation. They had said that the records I asked for, I think, were, you know, amounted to like 19 billion pages. Something they use the word billion in there. Something ludicrous.
Oh, my God.
You know, they said that the records that Mueller collected were, you know, that surpass what is being held at the National Archives. I don't believe them on that. But on these particular records, you know, this is what the sort of attachments and supplemental material that went along with all of the interviews FBI agents had conducted with subjects and witnesses in the Mueller investigation. And there were hundreds of witnesses and subjects in the investigation. So perhaps they subpoenaed many records, or there was just a document preservation order. People were forced to turn over emails, you know, related to the scope of the investigation, which is, you know, Russia. Was there any, you know, collusion with, you know, between the campaign and Russia? So that's what these records sort of make up. And my goal is to, you know, in the course of however long it takes, is to kind of help set a different narrative than, or an expanded narrative than the one that you know, we've seen in Mueller's report.
Right. You know, a few questions here. Mueller's report. I got it. Let me see if I can't find this. Oh, shoot. I'll come back to that in a second.
Yeah.
The other news story I woke up to today was a story about Christopher Steele did a second dossier for the FBI on Trump that was compiled while he was in office. Do you know about this?
I have to say, I don't know about that, Nicole. I'm immediately questioning the veracity of it. I haven't seen any sort of, you know, I don't know who the Times of London sources are.
Right.
I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
I mean, I find it hard to believe. I'm a bit skeptical of it, to be honest with you. That's my initial reaction.
Okay.
I haven't seen anything like that. And, you know, at that time, it's just odd, because what we do know from the sort of public reporting, and that's even the investigations that have taken place, is that, you know, once Steele went to journalists, you know, just some months earlier, to disclose information in his dossier, which BuzzFeed News published, the FBI cut him off. So he was in some ways persona non grata, you know, at the Bureau. So the fact that he supposedly worked on a second one, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where that comes from or who's making that claim.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah, because that I saw that. It's like, whoa, if this is true, that changes a lot, doesn't it? I mean, if the FBI was working with Steele after Trump was in office, that turns all the doubt about the first one on its head, doesn't it? Wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's strange.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, I think the thing about Steele that people should not forget is that, you know, he had been working for the U.S. government, a number of different agencies, for many, many years, and had provided dossiers or reports to the State Department, clearly on issues that where he has expertise, like Russia and other, I think Ukraine as well. So he had been providing this. But doing it after Trump was inaugurated, that just seems odd to me.
Right. No, to me too. So we're saying that you're saying that the let's get more information on this because they're not necessarily take it at face value.
Yeah, and there's no one that's, as far as the sources are concerned, it's unknown who they are.
Right, right. I hear you. Jason Leopold is with us, obviously, the senior reporter for BuzzFeed News, the FOIA terrorists. Are they still using that terrorist descriptor, or have they come up with something more creative for you?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything lately what they refer to me as, but... I think the terrorist thing is kind of, I've taken ownership of that.
Yes.
And they don't have it anymore.
Good. Yeah, I guess it's like what Trump is trying to do with the big lie.
So, right. Yes.
And how astounding is that? Have you uncovered anything in all your paperwork, Jason, about the way he does this stuff? I mean, the way he appropriated the term fake news, which was used against him to talk about the places like Fox who were... who would concoct these bullshit stories to benefit him. And then he started using the term to his advantage. Now he's trying to do it again with the big lie, which we all know is his lie that he won the election, that Biden stole it from him. This is a weird tactic. These are psychological games. Have you seen any communications about this kind of psychological warfare that he embarks on?
I haven't. And it's funny that you mentioned like just the fake news, because I remember when that became, a maxim that it just appeared everywhere. And I did file requests with the government, FOIA requests with the government kind of very early on, to see if they were using that. And it just seems to have appeared in various emails within the government officials were using the term fake news.
Right.
And just, no explanation behind it. Just suddenly it just appeared.
Right.
Recently I actually obtained some records from Health and Human Services when Michael Caputo put in charge of public affairs there, and it was used quite a bit.
Right. And bragging about, if I recall correctly, Michael Caputo bragged about how he got the CDC to change some of their verbiage, some of their directives based on the nonsense coming out of HHS.
Yeah. Yeah. And also what they felt was like, the fake news media.
Yeah.
And I believe they even referred to it, the media that way. But it is kind of amazing to kind of see the way in which that phrase, or as you noted, the big lie.
Right. That he's trying to appropriate that. And I bring it up, Jason, because I had this Twitter exchange. So the story breaks this morning. I noticed somebody on Twitter, tweets out, Telegraph font, former MI6 spy produced a second Trump dossier. Somebody responded to that tweet. A guy named Peter Krumenich, I don't even know who he is, but he said, tinfoil hats, anyone? Mueller investigation found no evidence to back up the claims of collaboration in Steele's first dossier, so why should we waste any more time on his latest conspiracy theories? And I look at that, I'm like, way to rewrite history, but this is what they do. The Mueller report didn't find nothing, but that's the way they framed it in their fake news world, and that's what the Trumpers and these reality denialists keep pushing. This is a thing where that's their narrative now, that the Mueller investigation cleared Trump and his cronies of any wrongdoing, which couldn't be further from the truth, could it?
Well, Mueller even testified that Trump was not cleared.
Right.
And the it's interesting. You know, we're talking about the Mueller report after it was, you know, years after it was written, but it's a monumental report. You know, this was a historic investigation. And, you know, the fact is that a lot of people put their hopes. Now, I'm a reporter, right? I just want, when I was reporting on this, I just wanted to get some, you know, information to report. But people
just give me some hopes. Truth, man. Give me some truth, to quote
exactly
John Lennon.
John Lennon would
that's right.
Would sing.
Yes.
But I think people put their, you know, all of their hopes that Mueller, of course, how can he not come out with something that proves Trump's guilt? And and when he didn't, you know, it was just immediately assumed, well, he didn't, therefore he cleared Trump. He did not clear Trump.
No.
He did not, he charged many people, you know, in the campaign. And, you know, he said that in many instances there was just no evidence that they were able to turn up that, you know, that would prove the things that he was investigating. But when he testified after his report was written, he was actually asked that question about clearing Trump, and he said no.
Right.
You know, that he's not cleared. And, you know, that's a very lengthy report. Most of, you know, the people who are discussing it or who discuss it have never read it, don't have any idea what's in it. I don't blame them because it's a lot to read.
Right.
But
and again, you had the president and all his cronies saying no collusion, no, you know, whatever. There and Bill Barr totally misrepresenting what was in the report. And that's what they ran with. This goes along with the gaslighting of America. It doesn't matter what the report actually said. What they're telling you it said is not what it said at all. But that's the narrative they run with. And that's their truth today.
Exactly. And it brings me back to, you know, these records, right? And it's why these records are so important.
That's right.
You know, and it's why the public, like, I am trying to, you know, beyond just writing the story about it, but share the records with people so they can see for themselves what the documents say, what, you know, what was being said at the time, what was being discussed, why there was, you know, investigative interest in the campaign's activities as it related to Russia. I'm not saying that there's, you know, all the answers are there, but you can get to see this and gain a better understanding of what was happening. And frankly, it is kind of, you know, it's odd. I mean, when you read an email from Roger Stone that said in August of 2016, you know, that says, I know how to win this,
right,
but it ain't pretty.
Right. You got to go, okay, what does that mean? And what followed that? And that's what you're able to produce for us.
Right. Right. So, yes. So it's, you know, it's interesting that it will continue getting these records and that it will continue to, I'm glad that people are still, you know, interested. I'm certainly fascinated by it. And as I mentioned, I think it's very newsworthy, but I think it will, continue to add to the narrative, and hopefully expand upon the narrative that, that Mueller kind of left us with and go way, way beyond that.
Gotcha. Hey, Jason Leopold, have all your FOIA stuff given you any insight on what that raid last week might have turned up from Rudy Giuliani's apartment or office?
It has not, no. And, you know, I do have some records that I am that I asked for last year related to, you know, Giuliani's dealings in 2019. It's very interesting. We spoke about this, the criminal referral that was filed against Trump after the whistleblower stepped forward to detail his, you know, his phone, this phone call that he had, you know, with the president of Ukraine.
Right.
I mean, there's connections to all of that. So I'm hoping that, you know, there's some more records that, you know, that we'll be able to shake loose where we can, you know, kind of find out what was taking place. And you know, part of my reporting, in addition to, you know, trying to kind of set the stage for getting records about the Capitol riots, mm-hmm. is to also, you know, take a look back at about the sort of the damage that may have been done, and there was a lot of it that was done, you know, that the Trump administration did for 4 years. You know, what took place for 4 years that unfolded during their tenure in office. And so there's, you know, kind of assessments that, you know, you want to make. And that's what I'm hoping, you know, some of these records will, you know, will help us understand, you know, better what happened behind the scenes at various government agencies. Like, for example, right now, you know, Housing and Urban Development, I'm waiting for, you know, some records there.
On what Ben Carson did?
Yes. You know, so it's, you know, there's a lot that we don't know. And so, again, I'm just returning to these, you know, these documents yesterday when I looked at it, and I had been reporting pretty extensively on the Mueller investigation. I looked at these records. I'm like, wow, I haven't seen this before. This is crazy. This is incredible. And you know, and what does it all mean? And so I'm hoping that, you know, we can continue putting it out there.
I hope
Not forgetting that there's a, you know, Joe Biden's in office. There's going to be, you know, much needed scrutiny on his administration. And, you know, we're certainly doing that, and I'm certainly doing that as well. But I can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Of course you can. So, and the reason I asked about the Rudy thing, just so you know, the interest in this story and what happened and what's going on is very far reaching. You'll appreciate this more than probably anyone else. But the other day, a few days ago, somebody, Lucifer, on Twitter tweeted out, has dollar store Nosferatu, excuse me, Rudy, been arrested? And I answered, I said, not yet, but soon. That tweet was liked by Perry Farrell.
Oh my God. No way.
Yes.
No way.
I thought you'd appreciate it. I'm like, what? Perry Farrell? What? And I click on it. And sure enough, he doesn't follow me, but he liked my tweet.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
That's amazing. Perry Farrell. Wow.
For those who don't know, Porno for Pyros, Jane's Addiction, right? Perry Farrell. So rock star.
Yeah.
Out of the blue. Who knew?
Yeah. That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, exactly. Who knew? I think that's funny.
Yeah. So, and I thought, oh, it's got to be a fake Twitter account. No, it's him.
Yeah.
But I followed him. He doesn't follow me. But anyway, so there's that.
Yeah.
And there you are wearing your Cure T-shirt. And today you're getting your second vaccine.
Thank God. I'm very excited about it. Feels like a game changer.
Yes. I had mine actually probably a month ago now. I was able to get in fairly early, being under 65. Wow. And the day I hit 2 weeks after my second shot, I went and saw my kid and hugged her for the first time in, you know, 10 months or something.
Oh, that's
so, yeah, that's been the hardest part of this.
Yeah.
You know, not being able to travel. And I still, it still probably is going to be a while before I get on a plane. How are you feeling about how everything's going out there?
I mean, it's you know, in L.A., it's thank goodness we're in a much better position now. But it's been challenging. I mean, it's certainly been challenging as a reporter doing this work from home for more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son is 13, so he lives with us, so I do get to hug him.
Yes.
He's
13? Oh, my God.
13. Did I say he was 13? He's going to be 13.
Okay.
He's not 13 yet. I don't want to, you know.
He's almost 13. And my kid just turned 22 yesterday.
Amazing.
You met her. She must have been, I think, 10? Maybe when you met her, when we were out in LA.
It was still little.
Yeah.
But I miss live music. And, you know, I would go to at least 2 concerts a month.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm hoping that, I don't know, there's some live music I can see down the road soon.
Yeah, well, that's another issue that I want to get into, because there was this Save Our Venues organization that I know David Dayan wrote about that was, you know, it was launched and then I think nothing happened with it. So I don't know where that is, and I may have to get him back on the show to talk about that specifically.
I haven't seen any kind of update on that. I mean, I used to get these, I'm on the mailing list for the Troubadour, and they would send these, you know, updates regularly, but I haven't seen anything, and I haven't, at least in LA, I haven't heard of any of the, you know, more historic venues being shut down.
Right.
Which is a good thing.
Yes.
But it's very interesting. I a friend of mine who's a musician is so anti Save Our Venues.
Really?
And at least in LA. And one of the reasons is because, you know, he explained to me, as a musician, he goes and plays live, you know, he would play at these clubs quite a bit. And in LA, there's still sort of the pay to play attitude. Right? So, you know, if you're an artist, you have to go in and guarantee that you're going to bring
sell so many tickets. Right.
And they give you end up leaving with, you know, $50, and the venue, you know, gets the bulk of everything. So there's a lot of animosity. Hmm. And I thought it was interesting between some of the artists. Or many artists in LA, you know, local artists and the venues, because there hasn't been the same love, you know, there.
Right, so, right. Oh, that anyway. Is interesting. And I've been out of the music end of the business for so long, but I still talk to a lot of my musician friends who are all, so many of them were doing, you know, live streams on a weekly basis or whatever. Many still are. I think Jonathan Brooks still is. I know Dan Navarro has hit the road again. He got a van and he just went out, but he was doing a daily live Facebook session every day. But having to rewrite the rules. And I did see someone from the music business posted a wonderful sort of a primer when things start opening up again. As just advice, you know, go to shows, go out and see them. Do not ask for comps. I don't care who you are, where you are. No comps. Don't ask, you know, because they're all hurting right now.
Yeah.
So I just hope all these venues reopen and that, you know, live music starts again.
This is what I've done in the past year, like in supporting artists.
Uh-huh.
I have been purchasing
T-shirts.
Ah! Band T-shirts.
Oh my goodness.
Haven't been worn, but like, I think I must have purchased like another 300 T-shirts.
Oh my. For those who don't know, Jason Leopold probably has the biggest band T-shirt collection of all time. Yeah. Do you wear anything other than band T-shirts?
Only when I have to, Nicole.
I hear you. All right, Jason Leopold, I'm going to let you go. I know you got to go get your shot, and we're running out of time. It's so great to talk to you. I can't wait to see you in person again, and I guess we're getting closer.
Yes. I hope that we do get to see each other in person, and it's always great.
Yes.
Always great. You and chat with you.
You too. And congratulations again on another scoop. I was so thrilled. Look, I was looking forward to just, you know, talking to you about stuff. And then I wake up, it's like,
we have something.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Jason's got a huge story today. Perfect timing. Yeah. So it works.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nicole.
Love you. Love you. Love you. Oh, Jason Leopold, one of the really good guys. I met Jason simply by really doing this show. Probably what, 12, 13, 14 years ago? Maybe it was when I was on Air America. And we struck up a friendship because he's just what you hear. And he's a music lover, and we bonded over music and, you know, he's one of the good guys. And so it's so great to see him enjoying wonderful success. And I'm only sorry that I didn't get to talk to him, that I didn't see the story about this Judge Berman ordering the Justice Department to release these documents in which the Trump DOJ basically lied, cleared Trump of any wrongdoing, and that was not the right move. So somebody, let me see if I can find it, Randy Lover in the chat room at NicoleSandler.com Listen Live page wrote, it looks like justice got put on hold for the Trump administration and is starting back up. Well, let's hope so. Unfortunately, we're still stuck with, you know, so many remnants of that administration. And of course, Trump's insanity and his gaslighting. The whole I'm going to start calling everybody talking about, you know, the big lie as the big lie. It is so typical of the crap he does. Somebody should write a book about that, about this, the mental manipulation, the gaslighting that he excels at. That's what Trump is good at taking fact and skewing it and twisting it and making people believe the lies. I mean, this is like the Pied Piper with, you know, with all these idiots following him to, I guess, the rapture. Isn't that what they want? Let me close out the show with some more Florida news, because I think I told you a little bit about this yesterday. It was happening just as the show was ending. But Florida Governor Ron Moron, death sentence strikes again. Yesterday, he said that he was going to do away with all COVID-19 emergency mandates as of July 1st. Right. So he's signing legislation, a bill into law saying that as of July 1st, no more anything. We're free and clear, which we are not. But this is what death sentence is saying. And because the law wouldn't take effect until July 1st, he's going to sign an executive order making it happen immediately. Let it be so. Isn't that the Star Trek thing? Make it so. Make it so. Anyway, I guess I shouldn't talk about Star Trek on the May the 4th, because today is only Star Wars time, right? I should play Shirley Chauvin, who, you know, is one of the wonderful artists that I discovered during the pandemic, who makes these great song parodies. She did one. I struggled with, should I play this or not? Because it's funny, but it's weird. It's a Star Trek song. Anyway, we'll see if I have time. But anyway, so Ron DeSantis is now saying, as of, you know, immediately, no masks, no nothing. Well, just so you know, you can push back. South Florida schools all said, screw you, DeSantis. I don't care what you say. We are going to mandate that masks be worn. You know, at our schools, we will open up, but yeah, you got to wear a mask. And Disney World and Disneyland, well, but Disney World is what we have in Florida, is saying, whatever you say, it doesn't matter. Masks are still mandated here at Disney World, too. All right. So we got that going for us. And hopefully the American people will see through him. By the way, Charlie Crist, who is the former governor of Florida, who was a Republican but sort of acted like a Democrat, now is a Democrat who kind of acts like a Republican. Anyway, he decided he's running for the Senate. He's going to challenge Marco Rubio. Go for it. I mean, I'm not a Charlie Crist fan, but he's better than DeSantis. All right. I think I should leave you with this, because it is May the 4th. And so we'll leave you with Shirley Chauvin's, what did she call it? May the 4th be with you for 4th May Star Wars Day. Yeah, that's what it is. So I guess sing it, Shirley. Oh, I got to fix the screen. All right. We'll do it. I'll do it like this. Take it away, Shirley. Chauvin, May the 4th be with you.
In our galaxy, life has been crappy in 2020 and 21. Today we look at things brightly. Now may the 4th be with everyone. Great disturbance amongst the force. The Darth virus has brought the Death Star.
We're doomed.
The dark side is strong. It's kept everyone indoors. May the 4th be with you. Now we will press on.
All right, this is weird.
Now may the 4th be making us whole. deep. We've had a torch sleep, but we're not done. We've all been playing our part. We have made a start. We soon will have won. Play your part, wash your hands, wear a mask. Social distance, it's not much to ask. And if you're feeling sick today, please stay in your bed and keep away. Get a jab, play your part. Do or do not, there is no try. Jedi, May the 4th is here. That's why we take heart, we take heart.
Live long and prosper.
Huh? Wrong franchise.
May the 4th be with you!
Woohoo! May the 4th be with you, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye.